Clarion.
Clarion.
Clarion Gaming.
Exclusive event sponsors of the Gambling Files podcast. Hello and welcome to the Gambling Files podcast. I am 50% of your hosts in the time of data analysis. The other 50% is Fintan Costello. Fintan, hello.
Hello, John.
Fintan, you moved house recently. How has that been?
I haven't actually moved house yet.
What? Why not? Is there work going on? What?
There is work going on. So currently got the builders in. They've literally just sent me a picture of a full skip. And I had a slightly upset neighbor message me this morning about the noise. And yeah.
Well, you know how I feel about noisy neighbors, Fintan.
Yeah, but like I did feel for her because it's like three small kids, her and her husband works from home as well. And I know the builders have got a machine in taking the glue off the floor from where they've lifted the carpet and stuff. And so they're basically sanding the floor with some very loud machine. So I did feel sorry for her. It's not great.
No, but at the same time, you know, did you force her to have unprotected sex? You probably didn't.
So like, obviously, I had years ago when I was in college, I had a part-time job working for Dell Computers. And so when people would ring up to complain that their computer was shite, the rule they had was you could empathize, but not agree. Or something. So like, I can hear you're upset. I can see that you're upset, or like, I understand that you're upset and move them towards a solution, that kind of thing. So I know, look, if it was me, I'd be furious as well. But we're doing it all within the building rules. Everything's done within the hours. The lads have got to get it done and it'll be over quickly. So, you know, there's only so much I can do.
Yeah, fair enough. As long as you're doing it within the building's rules and regulations.
I had a meeting with the residence committee and the building management, and we walked through the plans and made sure everything was kosher.
Were they at that meeting?
They weren't, but I did put a letter through everybody's letterbox in English and Dutch explaining what was about to happen.
Did you use AI to generate that?
Even better, my wife. I wrote it in English. She translated it into Dutch for me. And
it probably says something like, "Hello, my name is Fintan. I'm a very twat and I've just moved into your building." Because, I mean, your wife is Australian. She could be capable of such a move.
Always possible. Always possible. And if she has, then that's what it is.
If she has, and if she's listening, we both know she's not, then
no, she's
I
not.
Respect you even more than just for your simple bravery of marrying Fintan. So anything exciting going on? Ooh, let me think. Found an article today that said that old people are hot now. So I'm like, taking great comfort from that. Not in terms of temperature, like in terms of...
I was thinking like they got two jumpers on. Like what's...
No. It was this thing. So it was... there's a thing that's been around for a while where when somebody turns 52, if they're still really hot, you show a picture of them with a picture of Wilford Brimley as he appeared in the movie Cocoon. He plays a pensioner in Cocoon in his 70s or 80s, and he was actually 52. I mean, the guy was born looking old.
Okay.
Now, he's a tremendous actor. He was also brilliant in The Thing, surely the greatest horror movie of them all. Paul Rudd has apparently just turned 52. And, you know...
The Canadian Prime Minister?
No, his name's definitely not Paul Rudd. Paul Rudd is Ant-Man.
Oh, okay.
That's a hell of a leap you just made.
I know, it's just those Canadian Prime Minister. Oh, no, it's just in terms of, I'm not even the same.
No,
yeah, it doesn't even rhyme.
It's quite close to not even being the same alphabet.
It's like we're having two different conversations.
It's amazing. I'm so proud of you right now.
Thanks for carrying me, John. Thanks for carrying
me. Well, funnily enough, I'm leaving that in.
Yeah, for sure. If there was ever any doubt that Fintan was lucky, this is it.
I've got to send a message in a minute to a Canadian gentleman.
Oh.
Probably, I think, the best dressed man in the entire gambling industry to come on as a guest in a couple of weeks. I'm pretty excited about
it.
I am excited. And I will bring up his sartorial elegance. Total legend. Very excited.
Do it.
I asked him ages ago, but it was too early, and you'll understand why when we get him on.
Okay, well, that's exciting.
So, Paul Rudd turned 52, and apparently mm-hmm. that means that old people are hot now.
So I've got to Google Paul Rudd. I've got no idea.
That for dear life. Did you ever watch
Friends? But it's like a Hollywood 52. Like, that doesn't count. That's not normal. That's like, anyway, it doesn't matter. Like, he's got personal trainers, personal chefs. Like, he's probably had work done. He's probably on all the stairs. Like, it's not a normal 52.
Don't take away my one win for the week. I'm reveling in my age today. I'm not 52, okay. But it's not far away.
You be you. You be you.
You bastard.
You're gorgeous to me, John. Your spirit shines through.
My spirit is a little dull today. I think it's fair to say. So we have Luca Pataky on today from Sport Radar, talking about AI and applying it to sports. And it's really interesting. It is quite a nerdy episode, isn't it?
It's yeah. So he's doing vision learning stuff. So they're kind of deciphering sports in real time, creating the raw data, which then gets used for things like betting markets, which is super cool. And yeah, super interesting chat. We talk about that. We talk about AI. We talk about his journey into that and some of the cool stuff Sports Radar are doing. And yeah, it's very, very cool.
I've just thought of a question I should have asked him.
What?
I should have asked him how AI would cope with, you know, there's a few tennis players who just regularly lose their shit completely.
Yeah.
Let's just say off the top of my head, Filip Husis and Medvedev. How would AI handle that? I mean, are they going to watch Filip Husis and program something in so that it just recognizes somebody absolutely losing their shit?
Possibly.
I want to know. Damn it. I'm too late. We've already had our fascinating conversation with Luca. Luca, if you're listening, I'm just curious as to how you'll cope with a meltdown on the tennis court. Right. Without any further ado whatsoever, here is Luca Pataky from Sport Radar.
Enjoy.
We are joined by this episode's guest, our second guest of the week. What a big week it's turning out to be. I may have a cold. Turns out Fintan's a shitty neighbor, but we can put all that behind us because we are joined by Luca Pataky of Sport Radar. Luca, what is your job title and reason for living?
Hi guys. Nice to be here. So at Sport Radar, I'm currently Senior Vice President for Automated Content. And yes, it sounds cool, and it is also very cool. What actually makes me wake up and every morning and be excited about this is that what we are doing, what my team is doing, is actually creating some advanced tech, AI, deep learning, computer vision that creates content automatically. So data, video, and yeah, it's definitely a very cool thing to do. That's I guess, why I'm here and why I wake up every morning.
Okay. I mean, I've got to be honest, if I could stay asleep, I would.
I was just about to say, I hope your partner's not listening. Which would have been the other acceptable answer, right?
Do you know what? She's probably going to save it up for your anniversary and you'll be there, you'll have flowers and chocolates. And she'll be sitting there, you'll be having a nice meal, and she'll go, "So, Luca, That podcast you were on 6 months ago, I just wanted to check something with you. And that's it. You're doomed. And it's out there now. And it's recorded. And I'm not
forever.
I'm not forever for any money. Yeah. Let's be fair, though. I'm not.
So what's obviously when you say AI content, everybody. Oh, sorry. Go on, John. You're gonna. You got your pen out.
Well, no, I do have my pen out, but I was gonna jump there and say, well, there's been a couple of really controversial things in the news in the last week or so about AI generated content. Did you two see the story about the article that MSN posted?
No.
Fuck me. I shouldn't laugh about it because it's horrendous. But there's a former NBA player who died at the ridiculously young age of 42. And they basically posted what they're claiming wasn't an entirely AI generated bit of content, but it said that he was an awful player.
Oh wow!
Really bizarre.
As an obituary?
Yeah. Well, I do you know what? I'm going to find the story. So Fenton, you ask Luke what you're going to ask him. I'll okay. Find that story.
So when people hear AI content, everyone's head automatically jumps to ChatGPT or Google's Bard or these kind of tools. I'm guessing that's not what you're doing. So what are you guys doing?
So SportRadar generally is a sports data and tech company that, you know, delivers insights, data, experiences to our partners to fuel their products. And the big part of this is obviously data, right? And mm-hmm. so particularly what my team is focused on is creating AI algorithms, or more precisely computer vision algorithms, that are extracting data from video content and actually generating that data. So it's really focused around creation of data. So, and when I say data, I mean like what's happening in a match, right? So yeah. It would be how the players are moving, like what events are happening in game, tracking data, ball positions, and so on. And actually that then kind of fuels those experiences across different products, whether that's like odds products, like betting products, streaming products, also helps in other ways. But yeah, the focus really is on creation of content, like almost like a raw material that then fuels and powers the rest of the business that takes this raw material and builds products and services that we deliver to our customers on top of it. So so it's not quite like ChatGPT. It's more focused around computer vision and using computer vision to extract information from images effectively, right?
Got it. So historically, this would have been some bloke sitting in a stadium with like a couple of buttons in front of him for, you know, the ball's getting close. It's a corner. It's a free throw. It's a goal. And I'm massively oversimplifying. So historically, this would be, there might be somebody watching a TV screen doing it. There might be somebody in the stadium because of latency. And I think there was a famous case. Wasn't there some bust recently? Some massive raid where they were like 15 seconds ahead of the bookies or something? It hacked into the World Cup feed or something like that.
So latency is definitely a really important piece of it, right? And you were right in the sense of, yes, I mean, you know, in the historically, data collection would be fully manual, right? Mm. And also it was focused on very basic information. At one point, the demand from the market, the demand from fans and from bettors is growing. And they require more and more information, more and more insight. And at one point, you come to realization that you actually, it's not anymore scalable or even feasible to use humans effectively to do this, right? So it's a lot more about how do you expand or actually increase the amount of data that you can collect and process, rather than sort of changing how it's historically done. Because basic stats are basic stats, and very often they are still collected by like officials, I would say, but there's a lot more than basic stats, and this is where kind of the world is moving. What was once enough, like it's often in a lot of situations, what was once enough for a fan to get engaged and entertained, it's not anymore really enough. And so we are using these technologies to help us collect more data so that we can create new experiences.
Like what? Can you give some examples? Like obviously basic stats would be goal, red card, corner, free throw, point in tennis or whatever. What's more advanced? Like what's the extra stats that your vision tools are using?
Yeah, so I mean, it goes more and more in the. It's actually what kind of the trend of micro betting is going into, right? So, it's not enough anymore to just bet on the outcome of a match, right? Or it goes a lot more granular and in a lot smaller chunks. So you start offering opportunities to bet on number of passes, to bet on number of tackles, even to the point where in a specific section of a game you bet on, I don't know, where the ball might be at that point in time. Table tennis, for example, is a big sport there. Things like how many bounces will there be off the table in the next rally, right?
So really,
it becomes like really, really granular, and it's doesn't require a punter or a batter to kind of stay for the whole game. Like they can jump in and it's an engagement for some time, and then they can jump out as well. But so I gave you one example in table tennis, which, you know, it maybe sounds difficult to believe, but betting on number of passes or tackles and stuff like that. And this starts becoming a lot about deeper data or tracking data even. And for that, you need to have access to more data sets. And those are not always the most effective way to do this manually. So you need technology to help you.
Oh, because I suppose there's two parts to this then. So for a betting company to offer that market, be it tackles or ping pong ball bouncing in a set, they actually need all the historical data to build up a model.
Yeah.
So stage one is like, we need to go back and look at all past game footage and process that to build up the models for the different markets and or the raw data to build the models.
And we'd do exactly the same, right? So we also would build those models and would build odds for it, and we would have exactly the same process. We would need to have a lot of historical data first, build our odds models, like probabilities on top of it, and then we can offer these products that then take like new data in and basically can generate the same probabilities.
So that's stage one. So you gotta gather all the raw data, process it, build a model, then to be able to offer a market. And you see like a lot of these markets that you've named seem very, like I said, kind of micro betting markets. So it's very quick turnover in terms of markets offered, markets closed.
Yes.
Bet is settled.
Yes.
And so then what it sounds like is the, like if it's still vision based, like if it's still your AI tools settling these markets or determining the outcome, the speed at which it must be able to process the data must be staggering.
It is. And actually, in what you just explained, like that process often will have to be so quick that even in the process of like settling the bet, you need to have automation, right?
So yeah, exactly.
No time to for someone to sort of interfere much, right? It needs to be pretty automated process, and yes, it needs to be extremely fast. Table tennis, which I keep referring back to, but it is one of the sports where this tech is the most advanced right now on our side. And there, the data is processed. We are talking about really sub-second latency. So the data comes out of the system in about 200 milliseconds. Then all the rest can happen. But yeah, it's all like really, really fast. And it has to be really, really fast.
And is table tennis, because it's 2 to 4 players max, it's quite a confined field, is like why is table tennis the best sport to start with?
So we didn't start with table tennis. Actually, we are working on a multiple sports similar sort of approach. Table tennis is interesting because it is a very popular betting sport. It hasn't always been so, but actually it has like really picked up in popularity after COVID, as you might know, and it stayed very popular. So we used to offer about...
It's an unusually fast game as well, though, isn't
it? Yeah. And we used to offer like... 7,000 games pre-COVID now we offer around 200,000 games per year, right? So it's an enormous amount of games, and you can imagine that it's also quite an operational thing. So it just made sense, and you are also right that from the tech perspective, it is a more controllable environment. And so we can place a camera and we can actually do a lot with a single camera. Okay. Some other sports are more difficult, but we are also working on this tech, for example, for basketball, which is a sport, team sport, where there's a lot of players and there's a lot of overlaps, a lot of occlusions. And we are also working with tennis where, you know, it's a different sort of experiment. But you are absolutely right. Every sport is a bit different. Table tennis is simpler from the environment perspective, but it is an extremely fast sport. The ball is the fastest of all of them, so it requires a lot of processing power to and yeah. good cameras as well.
Really, yeah, of course. So okay, so if we kind of get into the nuts and bolts, with then like, what are the skills or like what type of profiles of people do you have on the team? How big's the team? How big's your data center, or like how are you processing all this data? Like what software are you guys use? Like let's nerd out. What's going on?
I mean, without unveiling too much or giving you too much of a juice to the thing. I mean, this is all. So AI is obviously a big field, right? And there's mm-hmm. a lot of things happening there. Most of what my team is working on is computer vision, so a subset of AI. And even more specifically, like a lot of it is deep learning these days. So yep. it's quite quite sophisticated AI models that sort of try to mimic how human brains are working and then actually create, make conclusions or make decisions based on the inputs you're providing. So it's all dealing with images and then understanding those. So profiles will be like deep learning engineers, computer vision engineers, and actually a lot of those. So it's quite an important skill set. But of course, there's a lot of data involved. So you need to have also a lot of data engineers on the team that know how to, you know, process, manage data sets, prepare data sets for training of those models. So it's kind of like data engineering, computer vision engineering, deep learning engineering, and of course also some software engineering. But it's a very engineering strong team. We do processing, different types of processing. We do some processing in the physical data center, some processing in the cloud. But it depends really on the use case and the, you know, different sport. Some things make more sense to process in the cloud because you can scale basically, you know, independently, or how would I say, some things make more sense to process like at the venue directly. So it really depends on the case. But yeah, it's a very clever team. And it all started as a really small team, actually. It was part of like an innovation project. It started like, I would say, about 4 years ago, and then it grew. And actually, right now it's quite a big team of about 70 people. So
that's super impressive. So I'm guessing recruitment for people for the team must be very, because obviously, like, I don't know, Google shows up and says, "Hey, we're going to reduce all road fatalities through our driverless car." And Microsoft shows up with their crazy project and whatever other companies are out there and silly money being thrown around by VCs and stuff. How would you go about recruiting these types of experts for your team given massive global demand? And a very small pool of talent as well, right? Because it's still such a new field. Basically, I'm building up the case for you to get a pay rise, right? That's what we're when the boss listens, right? That's what we're getting to.
It's one of the purposes of this podcast.
Good. It's a very competitive market for sure. I don't know if I have a straight answer. Like, we've been pretty successful, I would say. Maybe it's the intersection of sports and technology that kind of attracts some people, and they like what they hear, and so they like being involved in this. We had a lot of cases where people were really just really excited about a specific sport that we would be doing or planning to do, and they are fans of the sport, and so they want to be involved. So I think that helps a lot of the time. But yeah, it is a very competitive market. But I think we have quite nice use cases that we managed to kind of draw people to, and they felt they are motivated by this. And to be fair, honestly, I think the team is quite solid, and you know, also stays with this use case, stays with these types of tasks that we have, and this is also quite promising. That it seems we continue to have very interesting things for them to do, motivating them for them to do, and they keep enjoying it.
Brilliant. That's cool. I mean, is everybody based in one location? Are you across multiple offices, or how is that set up?
Yeah, so we are very like a global organization. Sportradar has, I don't know, it keeps sort of changing, but I would say probably it's around 40 to 50 offices around the globe. So wow. Also my team is quite spread. There are sort of hubs. Most of the team is in Europe and, you know, time zones around Central European time, but we are very used to working like remotely with each other.
Sure.
And yeah, that's, we are spread around.
I found that story, by the way.
Oh yeah, what happened?
Well, Fintan, I'm glad you asked me this. This is the headline off the New York Post. MSN calls deceased NBA player useless in shocking AI-generated headline gaffe.
Oh, dear.
Basically, the headline... this is really genuine. This is unbelievable. The headline was Brandon Hunter useless at 42. And it reads like something that's been put through Google Translate about 14 times.
Mm.
Former NBA participant Brandon Hunter, who beforehand performed for the Boston Celtics and Orlando Magic, has handed away on the age of 42, as introduced by Ohio Males' basketball coach Jeff Bowles on Tuesday. This is my favorite sentence, though. Hunter, initially an extremely regarded high school basketball participant in Cincinnati, achieved vital success as a head for the Bobcats.
It doesn't sound like a ChatGPT. It sounds like English is in my first language content farm in somewhere very, very cheap.
Now that useless at 42 thing, that's just, where the fuck is that from? That's bizarre.
Deceased. Yeah, you could see it happening. It's kind of like just a bad cinnamon.
They've been putting out some really odd stuff on MSN. Apparently, people have been seeing stories about Bigfoot and unicorns. It's true. So, is this something that we can expect from Sportradar in the future? Is unicorns going to be a big market? Unicorn racing. Fintan, my million-dollar idea. I found it.
Finally. Fine. Have you seen the ones where they dress up in the dinosaur suits and they race down the horse racing track?
Oh, nice.
It's hilarious. Or like,
suits are innately amusing.
Yeah, just there's nothing you do in that suit that isn't funny.
It's true. I'd have thought I'd have been tired of them by now, but I'm really not.
Oh, maybe some branded ones. Next conference. Try it out there.
Or for the podcast, we do some video wearing dinosaur suits. Branded dinosaur suits. And we'll get the guests
mine's got a wig on.
Yeah, now you're talking. Yours can have a wig on. Mine, if it's T-Rex, something like that, or whatever kind of dinosaur, it just needs to have a unicorn horn, I think.
Love it. Love it.
So sponsorships are available.
For the dinosaur episode.
Of the dinosour outfits that we will
Look, if we go back to, sorry, small diversion there. We're screeching our way back to the guest before we crack ourselves up with our hilariousness. Sorry, my son just snorted across the room. Go back to your homework, you.
As long as it's not cocaine, he's snorting. That's fine.
Not you. It is Amsterdam. okay, so vision AI is a fascinating area of AI in general. I think obviously there's, you know, what you're doing with betting. The big obvious use case that everybody's aware of is the driverless cars, which are becoming, you know, there's I think two companies now with taxis on the streets in San Francisco and I want to say Phoenix in Arizona. where do you see, like, in terms, like, if we kind of, because I've been thinking about this a lot lately, actually, not just, okay, I've got a big wide open question, actually, it's just not heard now. So I've been thinking about this a lot. So there's all this cool, like, oh my God, AI can do all these great things, and you can have a ChatGPT, or you guys are using it to do some really, really clever stuff. What about me? All right, what's in it for me? So what should I be doing to make my life easier with AI? Like, how do I just, you know, what can I just outsource to the AI to take care of to make my life easier? I'm just a lazy guy and I just want to stop doing shit and I'd like the computer to do all the work for me.
Typical fucking chairman.
How close can I get to that right now, Luca? That's the question.
I mean, that's a really wide open question. I mean, there's definitely a lot of things where AI can probably help you. Sometimes I feel maybe we are not even aware and it's happening already. But yeah, I mean, obviously, as you mentioned, like driverless cars is the big thing. But, you know, AI and computer vision specifically in manufacturing, for example, is used for a long time to help, like, you know, with the manufacturing lines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is like almost in every country, I think, when it comes to like highways, there's a lot of like number plate recognitions that happen, like, for whatever reason. So actually, computer vision is there already in a lot of industries, and it helps in a lot of industries, like packaging, quality of packaging in manufacturing, and so on. Obviously, driverless cars is the big thing. In sports, it has picked up because of the data collection, particularly because it's just like I said earlier. You know, what was once enough is not enough anymore. And I don't know if you can relate maybe to this, but this is heavily driven by new generations, right? And mm-hmm. It's just, they want more. And well, sometimes it's not even that they want more, it's just they are given more and they consume a lot more. And in order to kind of keep them engaged, it's just not enough. If we go back to the sports case, to just send them like goals and shots and stuff like that. You need to do more to keep them engaged. And so for us, what we are thinking of here is how can this actually create your sports experience better? So whether that means that more data is provided to you on the screen, so you engage with the sport in a different way, maybe you play like daily fantasy and this just gives you more information that you can work with. Maybe for sports betting, you just want to pitch in quickly and you don't want to stay for the whole game. So it is about experiences here. So it's not necessary that I would say that you maybe need this in your life, right? But if you want to be entertained, we are trying to entertain you in a new way, or let's say in a better way. But I don't know, I use ChatGPT sometimes actually to help me get to some answers. I think it's pretty clever already. I don't want to predict where it's going to go, but I think there's still a lot of potential. Is it scary? Maybe sometimes a little bit. You know, like with any technology, we need to be clever at how we use it. And we need to be also careful at how we use it. I think we are trying to do that in that way as well. When we are thinking about data collection, like, you know, how do we use this and for what purposes do we use this? And our main idea is to have fans be more entertained and engaged. So we obviously want to make a positive experience out of what we deliver to the fans, not create like negative experiences. So that's kind of like the purpose here.
Got it. So basically I'm not outsourcing my job to a machine just yet is what you're saying.
It's interesting where this will go because, you know, there's already a lot of home appliances that use a lot of AI in. Like, there's going to be fridges that will order food for you, right? So maybe that's what you need, a fridge that it just has things in that you need in the morning, right? And those are just delivered automatically to you.
That would be useful. I'm thinking more about like just dealing with emails and just like Slack messages
just come and live in the countryside. I've got a dude brings eggs.
You got an egg man.
Yeah, the egg man. He egg comes dealer. Every 2 weeks, brings me two trays and one carton of eggs every 2 weeks. cheaper than the shops, and they just magically appear. And I don't need to use Amazon or similar. Just move to the country where the old ways still rule.
Yeah, it's not happening.
I think you could probably do my job by AI. I'm hoping so. I'm going to devote the rest of this week to finding that one out, I think. I'll have a little breather. Watch a few movies.
Because it kind of feels like there's a lot of excitement about AI, and there's definitely a lot of real world stuff. Like you said, Luca, like what you guys are doing, manufacturing. Like I was watching a thing today, and it was like this robot automatically sorting recycling into the correct buckets.
Yeah. Right?
So it's all machine learning. It's all vision machines, and it's just way faster than a human could. And it'll do it 24/7. You can see a lot of that, like the car safety, driverless car stuff I've mentioned. I think with the ChatGPT, ChatGPT is quite interesting from a problem solving perspective. I've seen people use it to help debug code quicker or tidy this code up into something neater. But it also feels like when you actually really get I think for me, when I really tried to get into it, okay, how much of my life can I do with AI? It's kind of like, it's not quite there yet. It's not quite like I can't really just, you know, maybe Gmail can suggest a sentence or can complete the word for me, but it's not like adding much value to my life. Which kind of reminds me of like the early .com stuff where it's like you can do everything online. Was a right concept, but the technology hadn't quite caught up to the reality, hadn't caught up to the expectations. So we didn't have broadband, we didn't have smartphones.
That's a very interesting parallel, though, because in terms of the stock market and AI, and I don't mean in terms of using it to predict how do I get rich,
but exists. Like, you know,
of course it does. That was always going to be one of the first things it was used for. Anything that's to do with making money is going to be
the Citadel guys and like these flash trading, and it's all algo AI driven stuff.
But I mean, in terms of the actual value of the stocks of the companies that are producing AI products, what's really interesting is that investors and analysts seem to be looking at this and saying, look, this isn't going to be like the dot-com bubble. It's not going to be a bubble as such. It's just going to be a new thing that's always going to be there now. It's not going to hit this ceiling and pop and, oh, shit, we suddenly realize that we've completely overvalued these stocks that aren't stockholding or whatever, have no IP or anything. It's none of that. It's like, actually, this is just how it's changed now, and this is going to be there forever. It's a thing that has an inherent value, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
I'm going to challenge.
It's not my opinion. I'm saying this is the opinion of analysts and the like, that this is not going to be.
And they've never got it wrong, have they? They're always right.
Fenton, now, look. You know my thoughts on the whole financial system of
capitalism. If you're somebody like NVIDIA, who makes the graphics cards, the GPUs that everybody has to use to train their models, and Luca, jump in as an expert at any moment if I'm wrong. Right, for sure.
Especially if you're blowing Fenton out of the water.
Right, for sure NVIDIA is going to make an absolute fortune over the next, as long as like China doesn't invade Taiwan and stuff like that, right? We ignore like geopolitics and these kind of things. But that kind of manufacturer that provides the picks and shovels to a gold rush, definitely. The Microsofts, the Googles, the sports radars of the world that sit on the raw data that gets used to process and create these models and train these models. Because the future is going to be in everybody having their own LLM or their own models for their data set. That makes sense. But then like two kids who used to work for Google go to Singapore, raise $1 trillion overnight or whatever the numbers, they don't even have a business yet. They've just like two lads in an office instantly get $1 billion in funding from some VC. Like there's more and more of that now where the money's just chasing anybody who was quoted on the Google or whatever that famous paper was that kind of kicked off the whole LLM thing. Like they've all raised billions of dollars each just for being in the room. So there's definitely going to be dumb money chasing a lot of smoke and mirrors for a while.
I could use some of that dumb money, Fenton.
Sponsorships available. Luca, who looks after sponsorship in your company? I don't know. So there's always going to be a bubble, right? That's human nature, right? Like, Jesus Christ, like, we're still in the same year where we had the NFT bubble burst, right? Like, that's like, and all the NFT experts and all the crypto experts are all now AI experts overnight, and that's what they're shilling. Human nature, and it's separating out the, okay, there's probably a big bunch of winners in this pool, and there's a maybe one or two winners in this pool. But human nature, there's going to be a bubble for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of the NFT and stuff, that was also one way to use the GPUs, right? Mm. They had to reuse them somewhere. So it was actually pretty difficult to get them in sort of the blockchain, because it was interesting because the whole blockchain and AI deep learning sort of at the same time kind of grew, and they both are extremely resource hungry when it comes to data processing. So yeah, at one point it was actually pretty difficult to get capacity even to train models. It's better now. I don't know. Maybe I'm not these days. I used to actually a couple of years ago, I was leading innovation team within Sportradar, and we did also a little bit of blockchain exploration. So now I'm a bit out of that world, but I can definitely see that it seems like it has cooled down a little bit in the last year or so.
You can tell by the price of like the retail graphics cards for your computers have plummeted, and you can buy a PlayStation 5 again. So here's a question for you. So there's this old, I'm probably going to massively butcher it and paraphrase it, but you know, when people are teenagers, typically the job they do doesn't exist or hasn't been invented yet. So a vision AI expert, I'm guessing when you were 11 or 12, didn't exist as a career opportunity. So what was your journey to get to where you are today?
So it definitely didn't exist. Actually, it's even just if I look just at the computer vision. So I said computer vision is there for a long time, but it used to be very... I would say classic. So, you know, just like geometry and mathematics, right? Like it was not like machine learning, deep learning, AI as it is today. The deep learning part of it really only picked up in the last maybe 3-4 years. And it was because of all the compute power that became available, and it was because of all the data that became available. Before that, it would just not be possible. So yes, this specific type only really started recently. So my journey into this is quite interesting. So I actually started with Sportradar just under 10 years ago. And the interesting bit where this journey started was in 2015, where me and two other colleagues started innovation team within Sportradar. And Sportradar has always tried to be a pioneer in adopting tech. And actually, that was also the purpose where we started that. And the idea was that we will... take new technologies and we will try to see how we can actually create real business value out of them. And that was always kind of the journey. And I've been, especially over the last 5 years, like really close to technology and how this can bring value to the business. The computer vision journey started in around 2017, which is when actually in the industry, so sports betting, this idea of deeper data became more interesting. So it was not just about basic stats. Live betting was already quite big, and it started to pick up more and more. Actually, even, you know, US side started kind of thinking about deeper data driven by daily fantasy at that point, like later on also obviously from betting. But this is when it started picking up, and this is where we said like we want to also try this. And so we slowly grew this team. I just always enjoyed being close to technology. But more than from the actual side of engineering side, more on the business side. How can it create value? And so that was always my focus. And we started in 2017. At that time, it was still not that big in terms of deep learning. it actually like really accelerated fast, to the point that today, going back to the hiring question, like, you know, you sometimes get a CV and it has a lot of experience in AI, but actually not all AI is the same. This grows so fast that, you know, if you are not on top of the things, you know, 3 years pass and you are maybe completely out of what is currently the mainstream in terms of AI engineering and development. But yeah, I like technology. And so that's how that journey started. And yeah, when we started, we didn't think where we will be. And now it's a lot of AI and a lot of deep learning that even in 2017 was not yet so big. So we just had to keep up with the environment, with the world, and with where things were going.
And so what did you, like, in university or school, like, what did you study to get you ready for this?
So it's interesting. I like to kind of change a bit my focus. I studied journalism first. I have an investigative nature, if you wish. So I always like that. I like documentaries that are like investigative. I just like this.
Sure.
So I started the journalism, but then sort of realized that Slovenia is a small country. You can't really be investigative journalist for long. You will, you know, like everyone knows you. Everyone knows you. So yeah, it becomes like a small place. So then I decided, okay, I am more sort of not natural sciences, if you wish, more like a social sciences kind of person. So I said, like, I will go into business informatics. So I went to study also business informatics at the same time, which was focused around already how to, you know, use informatics, IT for improvement of business processes and value. And I finished both journalism and that as a bachelor. And then for my master, I decided to change a little bit again. So I did master in business administration, so MBA in marketing. So my background is not technical at all, I would say. But when I was a teenager, I did do some coding. So I built some web pages. So I knew always, like, you know, I had a bit of that mindset, which helped me later to speak that language. I still understand when I talk to my engineers, like, what they are talking about. I can have a conversation and I understand the technical concepts, and I can, you know, I can be a credible partner in crime, if I can say it like this. And so that's how I built, let's say, my education, but always it was more sort of business administration side of things. And I always liked to sort of build something, grow something potentially from nothing to something that is very valuable and important. It was actually a great opportunity to use technology to kind of reinvent how we collect data, how we collect more data. It just felt like a really interesting thing to do, and it kind of really keeps me still motivated. And there's a lot of sports to cover, so stopping in sight, I would say, at the moment.
for sure. And in terms of, like, if because you kind of talk about, like, we do this piece of work and then the rest of the business start building on it and building their use cases and their different things, like, is it a case of, like, the best use case right now is micro betting markets or very, very quick in-play markets, or where do you see, like, what are you and what's the team most excited about is coming next?
So I think we are, there's two kind of really exciting cases currently. So one is definitely micro markets, and those are it's a new sort of form of live betting, right? And it requires, like, the whole, it doesn't work. It's just you provide micro markets and sort of they just kind of fit into the existing sportsbook environment, because first of all, they are really fast, and they, if you can imagine, there's just a list of odds opportunities or betting opportunities. It somehow doesn't fit because it happens too fast. So it's creating the whole new product, which means, like, it's not just the odds and the data, there needs to be some sort of streaming engagement. Like, you need to see the match, and what you see on the stream needs to be actually really quite related to the micro markets. So, for example, if I go back to the bounces on the table, it makes sense that you can actually see on the stream bounces on the table, so that there is a direct connection between what you can bet on and actually seeing the outcome. Otherwise, it's very difficult to follow. So, and this is what's exciting. It is actually a complete new user experience. It's a whole product, not just like a odds product, but also an engagement product. And one thing that we are also quite excited when it comes to computer vision, particularly and what it can power, is augmented streaming. So what it can do to the stream. And this is where I find computer vision fascinating, because it processes videos, and so it really understands the context of everything that it sees. It's not just about extracting the raw information. It's about understanding the environment, where things are, like where player is. And what that helps you is, once you know where the player is on that image, you can start overlaying that with information, and actually on that player, you can start creating interactive experience with stream. Like, you know, you can tap on a player and it gives you some information, or you can start actually interacting with the stream. And I think that's what also then pulls people in. But you can also start offering information on the stream that creates this experience for sports betting, right? So it's not just a raw stream of a game, but actually it does help you get engaged. It gives you information that you need to make the decision whether you will, you know, bet on this outcome or bet on that outcome. So it's those two things, like, so augmented streaming and what it does to that and how it creates a new ways of engaging with fans. And on the other hand, micro betting with a completely new live betting experience a lot faster is, I think, what's quite interesting. But there's a lot of other cases, I would say, not even necessarily just in sports betting, in teams and leagues and all the data that offers to them to improve performance and so on.
Yeah, because I was just thinking, like, you'd imagine from a coaching perspective,
yeah,
it'd be like, okay, let's go analyze the competition, let's analyze our own performance. Like, there feels like there's huge opportunity. And then on your augmented streaming, I think that's like, if you think of the new Apple Vision Pro thing,
yeah,
and things like this, you kind of go, oh, actually, that could be super interesting, watching sports and doing stuff at hand, like becomes Minority Report type things, right? So you kind of just start waving your hands like mad. And
yeah, like for teams and leagues, the performance segment is really big. And there again, computer vision is quite useful, because of course, for coaches and teams, video is also an essential part of analysis. And so if you are already essentially analyzing the video, you're providing data on top of video, but at the same time, it's all synchronized with the video, it's like you've basically immediately covered two very important use cases.
And particularly if you can pull in extra data. So like, for example, like the footballers all wear little GPS packs, yes, and heart rate monitors. And so if you're pulling in all this extra data, you can, you'd imagine you could probably do some really clever stuff with that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's, there's a lot of, exciting use cases. But yeah, as you asked, I think the micro betting one and augmented streaming is something that we particularly see a lot of opportunity. But it's also about like just creating more consistency overall in data. You know, I mean, of course, humans make mistakes. Of course, also machines make mistakes. But I like to call those mistakes by machines objective mistakes, right? And they are often unpredictable. But usually what we see is, like, you know, machine will always interpret, when it comes to data collection, it will always interpret the situation in the same way as it was thought, right? So there's no interpretation, like subjective interpretation of a situation, which, you know, it's good to, if you want to offer, especially in the betting space, like very quality, accurate data, I think it's good to have like that it's really consistent and it's objective, I would say.
It's a great answer.
It is. It
you
is.
Know those like blow-by-blow sporting accounts of a match that you can get the text updates, you get them on the BBC site and things like that.
Yeah.
I used to do those.
Did you?
I did. I used to do them for Sky. It wasn't my strong suit. I remember the conversation the day that they came to let me go. And a load of people had been given permanent contracts and they called me into the office and I thought, well, I'm definitely not getting a permanent contract. and the director, he says to me, he says, so look, we're going to be cutting right back on your shifts. he said, we're going to be cutting right back on shifts for freelance now. So sorry about that. I said, you mean you're going to be cutting right back on the shift of people with the surname Bruford? And he said, yes. Yes, that is exactly what I mean. Like, okay. And I didn't do that anymore. It's a very difficult thing to do, but and a thankless thing to do. Well, one thing I was thinking about while you two have been talking, and I've just been watching in, you know, shocked, know-nothing silence. I was thinking about the part that the athletes play in this and wondering whether that's going to become an issue in the future, because if you look at sports betting in the US, and it's obviously a good example because it's effectively starting from a blank slate, unlike most European countries. And the leagues are negotiating data deals, and individual teams are negotiating data deals, essentially. But I wonder if there is the potential for this, especially if you look at a game like table tennis, or, you know, some of the more niche games that might actually prove really interesting, things like curling, I don't know, crown green bowls, whether there's a potential for this to be something that will lead to investment in sport as well, and for smaller sports to grow and develop as a result. I don't know. Is that a part of this model in using AI and using data and building your own sets? You've still got to have that original producer of data, if you like,
mm-hmm.
which is the athletes. Is there at the moment a model for paying them, paying the leagues? I don't know. Is that a thing? Have I just put the cat amongst the pigeons?
That's a good point. Who owns the rights to analyze the images?
Yeah. So, I mean, the way Sportadder works is we have agreements with the federations. It's all licensed content. So yeah, that's in all of these cases. And what we do is usually very close with actually the federation, with the league. Also, like, whenever it's a, particularly in the athlete case, it's normally even down to each team, that there is a, you know, agreement directly, or that we work directly with each team, on what is provided and what data we process. So it's quite an important part to make sure that that's all done the right way, because yeah, as you said, there are ways to do this wrong, and as I said earlier, you need to use technology in the right way. On the other hand, I think it does offer also opportunities for smaller sports. I don't know if that's what sort of you were going for, but I think, you know, if you look at how smaller sports in the past would come to this, to a lot of data, it probably was quite expensive. I think these technologies do open up, like, let's say, do democratize this more and make it easier for even smaller leagues and smaller sports to generate data that they can create engagement for their fans. But yeah, I mean, normally in our case, it's usually done in very close cooperation with the league, and even with the teams in cases where we work with athletes for sports performance use cases.
That's really good, because I think, like, if you look at, I think two good examples are something like Mind Journey, which is, the people who don't know, it's a AI tool where you can put in a bunch of prompts and it'll generate an AI generated image for you.
Yeah.
And then Adobe in their Photoshop products has a AI image tool as well. The Adobe have gone down the route, they've trained their system on licensed images.
Yeah.
And Mind Journey have just YOLO'd it, so to speak. And, you know, if you're a company and you're like, well, I want to put image, like, we've all received that email from Getty of, hey, this image isn't yours, you need to pay for it or whatever. Like, if you're a company and you're going to start using these tools, like, the Adobe one feels like, okay, well, I'm not going to get sued at some point in the future if I use this one. And I think there's going to be more and more of that. Like, I think, was it Stephen Fry yesterday or something said that his voice has been stolen from him reading the Harry Potter books, the audiobooks, and used to train all of these things, right? So, you know, that's his IP. And
Stephen King's been kicking off as well.
Yeah, so
because it's got to be fed by something.
Right? Yeah, so the IP is... is effectively stolen.
100%.
And I think that's a really overlooked part of this, of like, is my AI copyright protect, or like, is it, how would you put it? Like, well, I'm not going to get, am I going to get sued or not? Right.
Is they're the generating data points. And if you look at individual sports, and table tennis being a fine example, look at boxing. You know, you've got two boxers who are creating this unique environment. Is this going to be the next image rights? You know, because image rights, certainly in football, I mean, it's colossal now. It's like, it's part of contract negotiations. Here's another interesting potential use for this, and this is probably something you've already done, Luca, or you're already aware of, but AI for spotting potential match fixing, fraudulent elements of play. I mean, presumably that could be a wonderful thing as well.
Right. Yeah, and actually a big part of, and that goes, so, you know, I work on just one sort of part of the AI journey in sport. There's actually a lot happening, and one of the areas is also integrity. So it's quite actually a big part of our business, and it's more and more powered by AI. It's, you know, we work with a lot of betting operators, pretty much any betting operator in the world. So we do have a good oversight, and we have also advanced tech that sort of looks for patterns in betting activity and tries to, yeah, find out if there is something going wrong there, right? So AI is more and more powering that as well, and it just allows us to also process a lot more data and be a lot more effective with this. So it is definitely helpful, and we are also using AI in these cases.
Nice. I look forward to a cheating-free future.
It's quite a big part, and I think it is important. We just going back to, again, we work with a lot of federations, and that is also a very important part always of our sort of service offer, right? To make sure that we will also keep an eye on whether there is any potential match fixing, and we work together with the federation as well to make sure that the sport is free, right, of such cases.
But that also ensures it's not just a parasitic relationship; it's a two-way.
Yeah,
it's a two-way exactly. conversation, which can only be a good thing. Super, Fintan. Do you have any further questions?
I'm out. I think Luke has been great.
I have just one, and I have to ask this because it seemed to really concern the chap that booked this. Are you familiar with Cobra Kai, Luca?
Just that it's a TV show, but other than that, no, I haven't watched it. I'm sorry.
That is better than a lot of our guests have done.
Okay.
I think Luca is too young to ask about Kevin Costner.
No, not that young. Oh, I just look young.
Do you have a favorite Kevin Costner movie?
No, actually I don't. People keep asking me like about my favorites. I'm weird like this. I don't actually have a lot of favorites. I have like a lot of movies that I like, but actually I never can pick my favorite. I don't know. I'm just that kind of person. Sorry.
No, I hear you. So I always say I've got three favorites because that keeps it nice and equitable, and they're very different movies. Could you perhaps name a Costner movie that you enjoyed?
I'm not a big fan of Kevin Costner, actually.
Right to the heart of it.
I like him.
And I also need to make sure that I don't embarrass myself by giving you a movie where Kevin Costner doesn't act in. So
that would be a first, though. So that would actually, we'd get a lot more respect for that, I think.
Because I always say The Bodyguard, and John just scoffs at me. So this is a safe space, Luca.
Okay.
I've never heard this podcast described as a safe space before. Okay, well, I'll take that question back off the table. Thank you very, very much for taking the time to come and talk and educate us, basically. It's been enlightening.
Thank you for having
Brilliant,
me.
Brilliant, Luca. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Gambling Files podcast, please find us on LinkedIn. Give us a big, juicy, succulent like. That nearly went wrong. You can find us under the name The Gambling Files Podcast. You can find us on Twitter under The Gambling Files. I think the handle is just at Gambling Files. You can connect to myself, John Bruford, or Fintan Costello, also on LinkedIn. We're also both on Twitter. And you can find all of our previous episodes at www.thegamblingfiles.com. If you enjoyed it, please share, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your colleagues, and we'll see you next time.